One of the crucial events in recent Middle East history, the 1973 Yom Kippur War, crops up in a new book about neuroscience. The book is called How We Decide. The author, science writer Jonah Lehrer, spoke to the World Science correspondent David Cohn, who's here now.
Hey, Marco.
David, explain for us the Yom Kippur War in which Egypt and Syria launched a surprise attack on Israel. What does that have to do with how the human brain works?
Well, the war provides an example of what researchers call the certainty trap. And the certainty trap is just what it sounds like. People generally have trouble questioning their own beliefs. They ignore evidence that goes against their ideas even when that evidence is overwhelming. And what Jonah Lehrer talks about in his book is that while it's generally believed that the Yom Kippur War started with a surprise attack, that attack shouldn't have surprised the Israelis at all.
There was all this evidence that the Arab countries surrounding Israel were actually planning an attack. There was a huge buildup on the border, you know, in Syria and in Egypt. And the Egyptians said this is just a training exercise, but there were signs that this training exercise was actually kind of unprecedented. The Soviets had evacuated their training advisors. There was one piece of evidence after another that, in retrospect, seems glaringly obvious that something strange was going on.
It was like the opposite of the Iraq War in a way. It was like a huge amount of evidence that something was happening.
Exactly. And yet, because Israeli intelligence services were convinced, they were certain, they had this theory, which they called the concept, that the countries wouldn't attack until they had enough fighter planes, especially,
right,
to counteract the Israeli air superiority. And that wouldn't happen until 1975 or so. So they had all these very good logical-sounding reasons why an invasion wasn't imminent. And those reasons, that those theories, which they were so certain of, led them to find all sorts of ways of discounting all this evidence which suggests an attack was actually imminent.
So the lesson here is one of the lessons is that you can't be too certain. A certain amount of indecision and questioning and indecisiveness is actually good.
Self-skepticism can be a very, very useful trait. And this is, I think what's so important is to become aware of the larger bias at work here, which is that, this goes by the name of cognitive dissonance too, which is that it's not nice to encounter facts that suggest you may be wrong, that suggest this really intricate model, which is the basis of your work, might actually be completely faulty. So what the human brain naturally tends to do is to ignore, to suppress, to disregard that kind of evidence.
Let's go back to the Israeli army for a second. They made this mistake, and they ended up not losing the war, although they were very close to losing this war. What did they do after that? They did something to sort of restructure essentially their brain, their sort of institutional brain.
Yeah, it's a little counterintuitive, and it's a very telling contrast with what the American intelligence services did after the failure before 9/11,
right,
and after
right.
the Iraq War, which is what the Israelis said is, okay, the problem here was this false consensus, that everyone was so sure of what they thought was going to happen, that the Arabs wouldn't attack, that the collective organization, the intelligence service as a whole, ignored all this relevant evidence. So what the Israelis decided to do was to basically come up with a whole new branch of the intelligence services, which was completely independent from the two pre-existing branches. So from the Israeli CIA and from the NSA, in other words. They created a whole third branch that the sole job of this third branch wasn't to gather more intelligence, because that clearly wasn't the problem. The Israelis managed to gather all these signals. They just ignored them after the fact. The sole job of this third branch was to simply be an independent source of analysis.
It's interesting. I mean, this Obama model that everybody talks about, you gather a bunch of dissonant voices in your cabinet and you just let them go. And then
the team
of rivals. That's sort of what the Israeli army or the Israeli government is doing here, which is interesting.
Yeah, and I think from the perspective of your brain, that's a good idea, is to maximize the dissonance, is to have the team of rivals, given that especially in these expert situations, one of the big problems is the false consensus, is groupthink,
Right.
This false sense of certainty, which when you're living in the bubble of power becomes very tough to puncture.
That was author Jonah Lehrer talking with the World's David Cohn. I love these stories, David, where we interpret big geopolitical narratives through the prism of human behavior. We should mention, too, that you've got a longer interview with Jonah Lehrer available on your podcast.
Yeah, Jonah has a lot to say about the reckless decisions that led to the global financial meltdown and why this I found fascinating, why sometimes it's possible to think too much about decisions.
And Jonah Lehrer is also available to interact with listeners online. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. We're launching a new interactive forum this week about science. It's a place where you can go to meet the world's top scientists and science writers like Jonah. And he's going to be our first guest, and we'll be talking about decisions and how we decide stuff.
And remind us how to check out your podcast and the forum, David.
It's easy to remember. Just go to theworld.org/science or just theworld.org.
A little simpler. Thank you, David. The World's science correspondent, David Cohn.
Thanks, Marco.